Chapter 15, Enlightenment from the Far East and a Manure Gas Energy Plant. Steve saw the old guru in whom he had believed since youth, the one he had wanted to take his parents to see just before he was kicked out of the house, and to whom he had prayed many times during his difficulties, and told him how he had become self-actualized. The guru made proverbial comments to Steve about what he thought Steve had learned. He said that many people in the modern world do experience enlightenment, just like the prophets and gurus of old. Steve mentioned that his band was making a lot of money even after replacing the drummer and ceasing to play heavy metal. He asked if he could make a tax-deductible donation to the guru, to which the guru replied that because he was affiliated with the Unitarian Church, such a thing is possible. He also told Steve that he was welcome to visit the ashram farm in India. There he could tend the cows and meditate. When Steve went home and told Maria what the guru and he had talked about, Maria pondered what they could do to further their connections with the old man. "When I was young," she said, "my parents, or my supposed parents, sent me to boarding school in Texas. One year for the science fair, I put up a display with an old rubber inner tube and some PVC piping. I put some cow dung in the inner tube and hooked it up to a camping stove to make a methane gas stove. The cow dung made methane gas, which powered the stove. I have heard that numerous people are experimenting with that these days. What if we started a methane gas plant for the guru's farm in India? They wouldn't have to pay for electricity. We could donate some physical effort and our expertise to help them start it, and they could pay us a modest sum over a period of time. We could possibly claim a tax deduction on most of the money we put into it. After we did that, maybe we could show it to some other buyers or the government in India and go commercial. It is very non-polluting, and you can use the dregs for fertilizer." "That's a great idea, Maria. We should research it on the Internet and find out the practicality of it," Steve said. "I'll call the guru and tell him our plan. This is real spiritual actualization." The guru, who Steve had accepted as his own personal guru, readily accepted the idea. Steve and Maria did their research and soon began the project. They got on the Internet and contacted all the companies and research programs that had anything to do with methane gas plants. Soon, as they accumulated information and basic know-how, feasibility became a practicality. As they worked to get the project off the ground, the guru contacted the government in India and inquired whether they wanted a part in creating manure gas farms, to which the government expressed its mild interest. Steve liked manure gas because it burns cleanly and makes good fertilizer. They started a New Earth Enlightenment meditation group with the guru, to which local companies were invited to learn how to meditate. Corporate magnates could also learn how to create businesses that are concerned for the well-being of its consumers and workforce while nurturing self-sacrifice, compassion, and temperance. In turn, the companies promised to encourage other companies to take the same route. These new individuals would invent new companies to design a successful new earth. One day, Steve's guru asked him what he thought of drugs. Steve responded, "I'm not totally against drugs, but because I've had a mental disability, I don't want to take them anymore. I found that I was like an absent-minded transcendentalist when I used drugs. Drugs helped me know where God was, but since I had erased my ego, it was like there was nobody at the helm to go out and awaken people from the twilight and ignorance we live in. It was like being a teacher of philosophy who is absent from class all the time and proclaims, 'There is no way to define God, so why should I attempt to define it?' If society had no real ego, it would have no pupils to be taught anything." The guru responded, "A person who takes drugs takes them because they have a desire to be unattached. They enjoy saying they don't need the world. It is a form of spiritual vanity to not relate materially with others by transferring spiritual beliefs to realistic goals. One must also consider people who may not be spiritually developed and who are physically deprived." He laid a hand on Steve's arm. "There are many contradictions we live in this world. One is being an unqualified absolutist. The path of drugs, for example, is the easiest way. It is like a parent who says, 'I am the only one who is right.' Sanctioning the use of drugs without proper guidance is like sanctioning something without laying down guidelines to earn the right to not be sanctioned, which is not very common among humans. One must consider that by renouncing a material item or the ego, people can become depraved. With many people, if you deny them material definition, they become psychologically and sometimes physically depraved. They forget how to take care of themselves. That, in essence, is hypocrisy and authoritarianism. Do you sanction people going to the corner store to buy a Redstone rocket for a dollar? That's what drug users do. Steve asked again whether the guru might want a donation included with the money he meant to share to create the manure gas plants. We already have some vegetarian restaurants and our large milk farm in India. As you probably imagine, we don't eat the cows. We only use their milk. We have enough money at present, but if you wish to make a donation, you are of course free to do so. Such a thing can only help. As Steve and Maria began to plan different ways to expand their business reach, he said to her one day, "We could start a large cooperative with small local businesses, organic farmers, new age grocers, herb stores, with options to expand. We could work with some friends at that commune we know east of Berkeley. Maybe they could help us organize. We could all run the manure gas plants cooperatively too. It might work." Together, Steve and his guru schemed how they could make a business that would be revolutionary. They also discussed self-realization, which is how they were able to do what they had planned. It wasn't material world planning, it was spiritual planning. During this time, Steve returned once more to the preacher he had seen back when he was high on pot and had felt lost and unfocused. Though he had only contacted this man twice before, Steve felt a need to share his awakening with him. He walked to the man's office at the church and knocked on the door. "Do you remember me?" The preacher smiled and his eyes sparkled. "Yes, you are the one who believed so much in the pacifism of the 60s. Steve described his experiences since he had last seen the preacher, how he had realized that he couldn't really smoke pot or take psychedelics anymore, and how he felt that he had become self-actualized. He had realized that he'd wanted to escape from the mundane through absolute transcendence of the world. Now he was no longer afraid of the world, and he realized that to escape from bondage was a contradiction. He had defined his condition as limited by the world, which was not really true. Then Steve told the preacher that his drummer had been found a terrorist, much to his chagrin. He said, "I realized that when they caught Ben for clandestine terrorism, we all worship false idols, directly, indirectly, or unconsciously, and that Ben's being a hippie was just a ploy of his. That doesn't mean I don't believe in all the things of the 60s as if they were false idols. I am just much more wary of things now. I believe in most of the precepts of the 60s, but with a newly awakened, more savvy eye," he explained. "How can you have a real movement if people are living dreamlike in a twilight world? That's why I woke up. Doesn't that Jimi Hendrix song say, 'Hush, the world is sleeping, the dawn told the wind'? When I had become unstable from the combined effect of mental illness and diabetes and the whole spiritual atmosphere I had created for myself had disappeared in the fog of San Francisco, I had an idea of how I was going to succeed. But it wasn't complete. I was psychologically naive. I trusted people I shouldn't have trusted, all because of incomplete subjective and objective ideas and whimsical fantasies. Now my enlightenment slowly is returning. I'm developing real ideas about enlightenment without drugs and with the help of the Godhead." The preacher picked up a well-worn Bible that lay on a nearby table. "I will interpret a quote from James 4:13. You said all your dreams went up in smoke, or as you said, in the San Francisco fog." He paraphrased, "Look here, you people who say, today or tomorrow we're going to such and such a town, to San Francisco, for example. Stay there for a year and open up a profitable business. How do you know what is going to happen tomorrow? The length of your lives is as uncertain as the morning fog. Now you see it, but soon it is gone." Steve's eyes shone. "That's beautiful. I've read some of the Bible about Jesus' miracles, but found them hard to digest. But now I'd like to read more, especially the Old Testament." "The Old Testament gives life examples of sin and its consequences," said the preacher. "It is much more understandable than the New Testament, but what I interpreted for you is from the New Testament." "Thank you for talking with me. I'll come back again," said Steve, grateful for the enthusiasm that the preacher now showed by sharing with him. Steve felt as if he had found a friend. "Walk in the light, not the twilight, or the fog as it may be," the preacher said as he walked away. "Go with the Godhead," Steve returned as he walked out the door.